This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. I was playing chess the other evening with one of the nation's most popular musicians, composer, conductor, clarinetist Artie Shaw. In addition to making sweet music, Mr. Shaw is quite a literary light. He's an avid book collector, a budding novelist, and he beat me at chess 3 times running. Between checkmates, this modern Pied Piper told me he had a favorite story he'd like us to dramatize in our series, a book which has often been called The Great American Novel. We mean, of course, Mark Twain's unforgettable yarn about a boy and a river, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. We didn't have to go far to find the perfect Huck Finn. He's the young man who played the juvenile lead in Life with Father, and you've seen him many times as the screen's Henry Aldrich, Jimmy Lighton. Are you in a Mississippi mood? Then here's Act One of Huckleberry Finn.
You don't know about me without you've read a book by the name of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. That book was made by Mr. Mark Twain, and he told the truth, mainly. Now, this here book goes on and on and on. I ain't long-winded enough to tell it all to you now, but I'll tell you parts of it. The way Mark Twain set it down, whoppers and all. Tom Sawyer and me, we got a heap of money for catching some robbers. And so the widow Douglas adopted me, aiming to make me civilized. But she never reckoned with my pap. Folks says pap is a no-account, good-for-nothing bum. Soon as he found out I was living at the widow's and had some money, pap started in to raise the roof. He breathed it around town he was going to get me for it. One night I come home to the widow's and there was a surprise waiting for me. I lit my lamp and when I looked up, there was pap's face, all whiskers and dirty, leering at me.
Say.
Pap!
Ain't you a deal of a big bug now, Huck Finn?
Ain't my fault, Pap. I ain't done nothing.
Don't give me none of your lip. Big bug, ain't you? Regular high and mighty.
Maybe I am, and maybe I ain't.
You put on considerable frills since I seen you. I'll take you down a peg before I get done. You're educated, too, they say. You can read and write. Think you're better than your pap now, don't you? Because he can't. Take that there book. Let me hear you read.
All right. General George Washington was the father of his country and the head of the Continental Army.
It's so. You can do it. I had my doubts when they told me. Now look here. You slip that putting on frills. I won't have it. I'll leave for you, my smarty. And if I catch you above that school, I'll turn you good.
Oh, but Pap.
Don't pap me. It's you a sweet sight of dandy, though. A bed. Bedclothes. The looking glass. Piece of carpet on the floor. Your poor old pap got to sleep with the hogs in the tent. But they say you're rich besides. How about that?
Oh, they lie, that's how.
Don't give me no sass. You got money. I want.
I ain't got no money, honest, Pap.
No. What do you call that?
Well, you've got no right to go through my clothes.
Should be telling your old man what he's got a right to do and what he ain't. 55, 60 cents. That's all you got?
Well, that ain't my money, Pap. It's the widow. She give it to me.
Now, you listen to me, Huck Finn. You're all through putting on airs, acting better than them that give you birth. You're coming home with me.
No.
You're coming with your pap to live like he does, no better. I'll teach you writing and reading and figure soon enough. With a piece of hickory.
Oh, don't beat me, Pap. Please don't beat me.
You're my young'un, Huck Finn, and I'll beat you if I please. If you've got any fancy notions you're going to run away from me, you can forget them. Because your old pap ain't such a fool as some folks would like to make out. I'm going to keep you under lock and key. Yes, sir, Huck Finn, under lock and key.
Well, now that you know something about my pap, you know why I run away. Pap, he locked me in his cabin and he whipped me. But one day when he was in town stealing some victuals, I dug my way out. I killed a pig and dragged its carcass down to the riverbank, leaving a bloody trail that looked as if I'd been murdered. Then I made me up a raft out of some logs and started down the river. The Mississippi River. And along about the first day out, while I was tying up to an island, I run into Jim. He was a runaway, too. Me from Pap and Jim from his missy who wanted to sell him to a slave trader. So Jim and me, we teamed up. We sailed nights, floating with the river like a couple of kings.
Huck?
Oh, just looking at the stars.
You allow they was made or just happened?
I allow they happened. Would have took too long to make so many.
The moon could have laid them.
Look, a falling star.
I allow that one got spoiled and was hoved out of the nest.
Listen, reckon somebody's getting chased over there in the Arkansas bank.
What do you allow we better do, Huck?
Well, they're probably runaways like us. We better help them. Grab the steering oar and we'll head for the shore. Well, there was two of them, and we hauled them on the raft just before the dogs got to them. One of them was an old fellow with a battered-up slouch hat. The other one was younger and carried a big, fat, ratty-looking carpet bag. They was both pretty seedy-looking.
Thank you. Thank you, my friends.
Yes. Thank you from a full and humble heart.
Oh, it weren't nothing.
Say, friend, what got you in trouble?
Don't you two know each other?
We was drove into partnership by circumstances and hound dogs.
Alas.
What are you lassing about?
To think that I should be degraded down into such company.
What's wrong with the company? Not good enough for you?
You would not believe me. The world never believes. The secret of my birth.
A secret of your birth?
Gentlemen, you see before you the rightful Duke of Bridgewater. Forlorn, torn from my high estate. Degraded to floating down a river on a raft.
Oh, don't take on so hard.
Oh, there's no comfort for me. Except one thing. To be called once again by my rightful title. Your Grace, or my Lord. Or your lordship.
Oh, that ain't no trouble, your grace.
Mighty happy to oblige, my lordship.
And, of course, you might wait on me at all times and bow.
Whatever you say, lordship.
Poor fella.
Looky here, Bridgewater. I nation sorry for you, but you aren't the only one who's been snaked down wrongfully out of a high place. I've been wronged, I tell you.
What do you mean?
Can I trust you all?
What are you blubbering for?
Bilgewater. Gentlemen, I am the late Dolphin.
The late what, huh?
The poor disappeared Dolphin, Louis the 17th. Son of Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette.
Well, who is all they?
Gentlemen, you see before you the suffering rightful king of France. Oh, misery, misery.
Oh, don't carry on so, Mr. Dolphin.
Oh, it ain't no use to try to comfort me. Except a few things might make me feel somewhat better for a spell.
Like what?
Well, I... like folks getting down on one knee to speak to me. And like calling me your majesty and waiting on me first at meals.
We don't mind majesting you, your majesty.
Which knee do you bend on, your majesty?
Don't find me bending on no knee.
Now, looky here, Bilgewater. This ain't no bad truck we've struck here. A nice raft and plenty of grub. We got to lay out a campaign, Bilgewater.
Yes. King, have you ever trod the boards?
What? The who?
The boards, the stage, the theater.
You mean play acting?
With amazing forethought, my friends, I have stowed away in my carpet bag the gossamer costumes for Handsome Romeo and the Beauteous Juliet. How does that strike you, King?
Oh, if it pays, I'm for it.
Pay! The country jakes at the next village downriver will flock to see us perform. And since I am rehearsed in the role of Romeo, you, King, will play the lovely Juliet.
Well.
No, I don't think so. I have it. Hamlet's soliloquy.
Hamlet's what?
I don't have a copy of it with me, but I think I can piece it out from memory. Let me see. It begins, to be or not to be. That is the, Bear Bodkin. Till Burnham Wood do come to Dunsinane.
Gosh.
And great nature's second course makes us rather sling the arrows of outrageous fortune than fly to others that we know not of. Wake, Duncan, with thy knocking. I would thou could.
The Duke spouted off there for right some spell. And sure enough, the next town we come to, the Duke hires himself a hall and the King sold tickets and they put on a Shakespeare show.
But stop you, the fair Ophelia. Ope not thy ponderous and marble jaws, but get thee to our nunnery. Go!
Start for the show.
Quick, King, how much money did we take in?
$47.
Bless you, where's my hat?
But you only governed 3 minutes of his show. What are you going to do next?
There will now be a rather long intermission. Give me the money, Your Majesty. We're heading for the raft.
Ready for Act Two of Mark Twain's Mississippi classic, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. This week's favorite story was selected by Artie Shaw, and it stars Jimmy Lydon as Huck. Well, the royal version of Hamlet is over, and we find our river travelers back on their raft with starlight for a blanket.
It was sure nice of floating down the river in the nighttime. What with a big reward out for Jim, we laid mighty low in the daytimes, you can bet. And me, I didn't have no hankering to run into my path. And don't let nobody tell you nights ain't good traveling time. Especially on the Mississippi River in summer. Of course, we still had the Duke and the King on our hands, but even so, we couldn't complain. And when there weren't no moon, I'd sit on the edge of the raft, my feet in the water, and watch the lights go by on the Missouri shore. And Jim would sing. Oh, it was pretty wonderful.
Floating to be free, floating to the sea, floating to be free. Oh, I sure love that song.
I guess the King's trying to tell you he likes it, too.
Look at him there, sleeping so peaceful. What you suppose he's dreaming about, Huck?
I reckon he's dreaming up some old whoppers about being a king.
Say, Huck, how many of them is there? These royalty fellas, real ones, I mean.
Thousands of them.
That many?
Well, sure.
Well, I ain't heard about none of them scarcely except old King Solomon. Unless you count the kings on a deck of cards. How much money do a king get?
Much as $100 a week if he wants it.
Mm-hmm.
They must have to work powerful hard for so much money.
Well, they don't work at all. They just sit around and talk.
Mm-hmm. Ain't that gay.
And when things is dull, they fuss with the parliament. But mostly they hangs around the harem.
What's the harem?
Well, don't you know? That's where they keep their wives.
More than one?
Sure. Well, Solomon, well, he had about a million wives.
So he did. Harem's a sort of a boarding house, I reckon. Most likely they have some rackety times in the nurseries. And the wives quarreling and making a big racket. You know, Huck, I don't take no stock in that talk about Solomon being such a wise man. Why would he get himself in the midst of such a blim-blamming all the time?
Well, but he was the wisest man anyway.
No, he was no wise man, nothing. You know about that child he's going to chop into?
Yeah.
Well, then, wasn't that the beatenest notion in the world? What does he do? Does he shin around amongst the neighbors and find out which woman the child do belong to? No. He takes and whacks the child into. Now, I want to ask you. What's the use of a half child?
Oh, hang it, Jim. You clean missed the point.
I missed no point. The fight weren't about a half child. It were about a whole child. And a fellow that think he can settle a fight about a whole child with just a half child, he don't know enough to come in out of the ring.
Oh, blame it. You missed the point 1,000 miles.
The real point is down further and deeper. It's the way Solomon was raised. Now, you take a man what's only got 1 or 2 children. Is he going to go around cutting them in two? No, he ain't. But you take a fella's got about 5 million children running around the house. Why, he'd soon chop a child in two as a cat.
Now, look here.
Don't talk to me about King Solomon.
All right, Jim. Let's forget the whole thing.
I wouldn't give a cigar for a whole raft for King Solomon.
Forget it.
Cutting children in half.
All right, I said.
All right, don't yell at me. This King Riga, he's worse than King Solomon.
Oh, I knowed he wasn't no king right from the start. Plus, he don't talk no French.
Why, Huck, don't French people talk the same as we do?
Oh, no, Jim, you couldn't understand a single word they said.
Well, now, how did that come?
Oh, I don't know, but it's so. Oh, I got some of their jabber out of a book. Jim, suppose a man was to come up to you and say, Polly Vaux, Franzy, what would you do?
Do? I'd bust him over the head. I wouldn't allow nobody to call me that.
Well, shucks, it ain't calling you nothing. It's only saying, do you talk French?
Well, then why couldn't he say that?
Why, he is saying it. That's a Frenchman's way of saying it.
Well, it's a blame ridiculous way, and I don't want to hear no more about it. French folks ought to talk like we do.
Now, look here, Jim. Does a cat talk like we do?
No, a cat don't.
Well, does a cow?
No, a cow don't neither.
Does a cat talk like a cow or a cow like a cat?
No, they don't.
Well, it's natural and right for them to talk different from each other, ain't it?
Cold.
Well, ain't it natural and right for a cat and a cow to talk different from us?
Well, most surely is.
Well, then, why ain't it natural for a Frenchman to talk different from us? You answer me that.
Is a cat a man, Huck?
No.
Well, then, there ain't no sense in a cat talking like a man. Is a cow a man? Or is a cow a cat?
Well, no, she ain't either of them.
Well, then, she ain't got no business to talk like either one or the other. But is a Frenchman a man?
Well, sure.
Well, then, Dad, blame it. Why don't he talk like a man? You answer me that.
Oh, you can see how it was trying to argue with a fellow like Jim. This weren't no use. So I quit. I dozed off a little that night. When I woke up, did I get a surprise. It wasn't starting to get daylight yet, but I seen it as plain as the nose on Jim's face. A house floating down the river right alongside our raft. Jim reckoned it had been washed away in the flood. And, of course, I had to go over and see what was in it. Jim didn't want to, but I says to him, do you think Tom Sawyer would pass up an adventure like this? Well, I'm not going to pass it up neither. We pulled the raft up close to the house, and then we clumb in one of the upstairs windows. Look, there's a man sitting in a chair. He's asleep.
So it is. Hello, you.
He don't budge. Hello?
He ain't asleep, Huck. He's dead.
Crikey.
You hold still. I'll go and see.
Will you take the lantern?
All right.
What's happened to him, Jim?
He's been shot in the back. He's dead, all right.
Let me look.
No. No, Huck.
He's been dead 2-3 days. Don't look at his face, Huck. It's too ghastly. Don't you look at his face.
Oh, we sure got out of there in a hurry. I didn't sleep much that night. Next morning, we went out to rustle up some food. Jim went to rent some ears of corn, and I borrowed a chicken for a little while. Well, just long enough to eat it. Towards evening, I come back to the raft.
Oh, hello there, my good Huckleberry. I see you have the raft hidden in a good place.
And since it is now approaching sundown, let us proceed post-haste in our journey down the Father of Waters.
Yes, by all means, Huckleberry, let's push off.
All right, Your Majesty and your logship. We'll push off just as soon as Jim gets here.
I think Jim was detained in the village.
Your friend Jim will not be with us the balance of this trip.
You turned him in.
Oh, now leave us not be hasty.
You turned him in. You found out there was a $200 reward on his head, and you turned him in.
$200?
We've been snaked. They only gave us 40.
Why, you low-down humbugs. Turning in a man who was kind to you and friendly. Tell me quick before I smash you with this all. Where they got Jim?
He's locked up on that big plantation half a mile inland.
I gotta get him out. I gotta get him out!
While you're at it, see if you can collect our other $160.
I ran as fast as I could towards that plantation. Maybe I could steal Jim. Maybe I could help him escape. He was my friend. Well, the blamedest thing happened. The first person I run into on the place is... Tom Sawyer, what in tarnation you doing here?
I've never done you any harm, Huck Finn. What you doing? Coming back and haunting me like this?
Well, I'm not haunting, Tom. It's me, all alive, all over.
You weren't murdered?
No, Tom, I made up the murder to get away from my past. Feel me, I ain't no ghost.
So you ain't.
Well, what are you doing here?
Well, this is my Aunt Sally's place. I'm here on a vacation.
Tom, you gotta help me. Jim's here on this plantation.
Jim?
Yeah, the old widow's Jim. And you gotta help me steal him.
Well, now you're talking. I'll help you steal him, all right. That's adventuring.
Do you know where they got him hid? Where they got him locked up?
Well, I just got here today, but... Hey, wait. Looky over there, Huck.
Where?
That hut. Over there by the ash hopper. There's someone going into it. The help's going in with some victuals. Now, what do you suppose they're for?
For a dog, maybe?
Oh, you're not very smart, Huck. When part of the victual's a watermelon.
So it is. A dog don't eat watermelon.
No. How are we going to get him out?
Well, the first dark night, we can steal the key, get him out, make for the raft, and shove on down the river.
Oh, that's awful.
Why? Wouldn't that plan work?
Well, certainly it'd work, like rats a-fighting. But it's too blame simple. There's nothing to it. It's as mild as goose milk. Now, my plan is, we dig him out.
Dig him out?
Yeah, but I guess we won't have to saw Jim's leg off.
Good land, what would you want to do that for?
Well, some of the best authorities has done it. It's the custom in Europe.
I don't think Jim would understand.
Well, we'll get a couple of kitchen knives, though.
What for?
To dig the foundations out from under that cabin.
Confound it, Tom, it's foolish.
Well, it don't make no difference how foolish it is. It's the right way. Now, I've read all the books that give any information about these things, and they always dig with knives. And not through dirt, mind you. Generally, it's through solid rock. And it takes forever and ever. Why, look at that prisoner in the castle deep. How long was he at it, do you reckon?
I don't know. Month and a half?
37 years. And he come out in China.
Well, Jim don't know nobody in China.
Well, what's that got to do with it? Neither did this other fella. Stick to the point.
All right. I don't care where he comes out. So's he comes out. But there's one thing. Jim's too old to be dug out with a kitchen knife. He won't last. Well, by the time we were finished, Tom Sawyer had that whole section of the country in an uproar. What with ransom notes and bloody shirts and all. But finally we got Jim free, and we were running off towards the raft when Tom Sawyer yells at us.
All right, that's it. You can all stop now.
Stop? What for?
Well, Jim's free.
What?
The old widow, she died a couple of weeks ago. She set Jim free in her will. I brought the message down here with me when I come.
Oh, Lordy.
You mean we've been going through all this trouble just to set Jim free, and he's been free all this time?
It's the adventure, Huck.
Well, I'll be blamed. Jim, I'm powerful happy.
Thank you, Huck.
But... I'd better keep moving. You know my pap, and if I sit still in one place, he'll be after me again.
No, Huck. He's both free. Your pap ain't gonna come after you no more.
What do you mean, Jim?
Never mind, Huck. He just ain't.
Well, you gotta tell me what you mean, Jim.
A house floating down the river. A dead man in there. That was your pap.
Jim, we don't have to run away no more.
No, Huck. It's like I tell you. We is free.
Listening to The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. Starring in this radio adaptation was the young motion picture actor Jimmy Lighton, and Horace Willard was heard as Jim. A particular nod of thanks to Claude Sweeten for his score, and to our sound engineer Jack Hayes, who so brilliantly portrayed the Mississippi River. And our thanks to Mr. Artie Shaw, who chose Huck Finn as this week's favorite story. Next week, we shall take out the old magic carpet, dust it off, and sail away in search of adventure at the behest of Mr. Lowell Thomas. For we're bringing you Scheherazade with one of her 1,001 tales of the Arabian Nights. With music by Rimsky-Korsakov, it promises to be a tapestry in radio. We hope you'll be listening.